Hey there, are you sick and tired of feeling sick and tired? Join Adel Kozilski and Faggy Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
It's a beautiful good morning. This is 101.9 High FM. It's the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. One of our last this year, I think, Faggy. Am I right?
Sure. What a year, Adel. And this week.
I think everybody's under...
We're all racing to the end.
Yeah, racing to the end and waiting to be there by that beach and the sand or wherever it is that we're going.
There's definitely an excitement in the air. Feeling it. The children are all excited.
I hope you don't come back in January and go... Oh my gosh, that went so quickly. Like, what are we doing? Anyway, we're going to wrap up this year's segment of Healthy You, Wealthy You shows with another discussion with our wonderful Dr. Jack Cussell. As you have been following with us, we're going through the human body. We're going through all different types of conditions. And today is no different. Today, we are going to be talking about disorders of the pediatric scaffold. I have to ask Dr. Cussell, pardon? Are we doing some construction here, Dr. Cussell?
Well, if it's not constructed properly, unfortunately it falls apart, particularly in adults. You have to learn how to age gracefully, and that's part of your pediatric scaffold.
There you go. So I'm going to be listening how to age gracefully, but we're going to start at the beginning, right?
Right. The body scaffold, which we will discuss in both programs, is made up of bone, muscle, joints, and collagen tissue, all vital components which help to keep us intact. In all the conditions, early diagnosis and prompt treatment are the two factors that stand out and that determine successful outcomes. In this, the pediatric side of things, the observations of the parents, mom and dad, and the caregivers is absolutely vital. And I will commence by starting on probably what is the most important of the four, the muscle disorders. Now, there is no muscle disorder that is more confusing both to doctors and to parents than cerebral palsy. What is cerebral palsy? Cerebral palsy, by definition, is a group of muscle disorders that affects the tone of the muscle and the child's movements, caused by brain disorders, brain dysfunction, and injury that either occurs before birth, during the birth process, or actually in the first 2 years after birth. The key to the diagnosis of cerebral palsy is abnormal tone of the muscles. This usually presents a spasm of the muscles in two main areas of the infant's body. The one area is the thigh muscle. It is known as adductor spasm. When you try to pull the thighs of the baby apart, you find that they are tight. And you find that as you pull them apart and suddenly let go, they jump back and cross over each other, indicating severe spasm. The diagnosis can be made at home. The other spasm that occurs in early cerebral palsy is known as equinospasm. Equinospasm is a down pointing of the toes where when you try to bend the foot back in the baby, it just doesn't go back. The Achilles muscle is in spasm. Now, sadly enough, these two disorders are visible certainly in the first 3 months. But sometimes you only pick this up when the child comes into your rooms walking on his toes, and all of a sudden you decide that he might have cerebral palsy.
Does the toes curl that way? Yeah. And then they walk like that?
They walk on their toes, yeah. Curled toes. The third important point in early diagnosis is persistence of the startle reflex. Now, the startle reflex is known as the Morrow reflex. If you hold the baby upright or on your hand and let the neck rest on your hand and then suddenly let the baby drop, it startles. Now, that reflex normally goes away by 6 months of age. Seldom lasts longer than that, but in cerebral palsy, it may persist far longer than that. But there's nothing more crucial than diagnosing cerebral palsy early, because then the physio can start. All the ancillary things can start, and the baby gets better and gets right a lot sooner than it would if you delayed everything, until it doesn't walk properly, it doesn't sit properly, or the physical milestones are retarded. It's too late to wake up then. It must be diagnosed early.
I think it's not a cure, right? It's just an assistance to help the child.
To help the
child. Not land up in a state of spasm.
Correct. And one important point that I've learned from my 60 years in pediatrics is never prognosticate in cerebral palsy. We've all been guilty as pediatricians of the same thing. You see a baby at 2 or 3 months of age that looks absolutely hopeless, and you give a hopeless prognosis. And that baby, when it gets to adolescence and adulthood, is a perfectly normal, if not a very intelligent human being. Don't prognosticate. The brain has tremendous recuperative abilities, and none more so than in cerebral palsy.
A lot of us used to take our children to that famous Fen, the physiotherapist. We used to schlep all the way out there. And she's really helped, thank so many people in the community. But it is quite amazing to even just go there, take your children just as babies to a physiotherapist, just to have them checked out. I mean, she spoke about the Morrow reflex often.
Yes, and the muscle tone. The muscle tone is so important, which brings us on to the next topic. A very, very important condition that's probably the commonest condition we see in our rooms, the condition known as congenital hypertonia. In congenital hypertonia, this is a condition manifesting at birth in the muscular group, which frequently leads to the parents or carers seeking advice. It's been called the floppy baby syndrome. You can wrap the baby around in all sorts of positions. It seems to have no tone at all. It's a completely benign condition, the complete opposite of cerebral palsy, in which the motor development can be delayed for up to 1.5 or 2 years. There are no further physical signs other than floppiness. Sure, it can be confused with some other conditions that cause floppiness, the main one being mongolism or Down syndrome, but then there would be lots of other features. This is pure hypertonia. And it's important to remember that the difference between this condition and cerebral palsy is the difference in the muscle tone.
We're speaking to Dr. Cussell, and we're talking about your scaffolding, meaning your muscles, your bones. What else?
Muscles, bones, joints, and collagen.
Joints and collagen. I knew there was more to our scaffolding. If you have a question for the doctor or would like to make a comment, 34519 is our SMS line. 0618951019 is our WhatsApp number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
We're talking to Dr. Cussell, and we're talking about all the pediatric scaffolding. And just before we finished off, I just wanted to ask you a question about cerebral palsy. A person can live with cerebral palsy their whole life, or hypertonia. Does it like limit your lifespan?
It doesn't limit the lifespan, but it sometimes limits your abilities. But it's remarkable how adaptive children are. They can sometimes overcome the most terrible palsy defects and lead completely normal, fruitful lives.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I was reading a book about a guy who had cerebral palsy in the 1950s in Israel. Rabbi Aaron Margalit, I think. And he was put in like a sanatorium. And he said that maybe for the first 6 years of his life, all he could remember is lying on his bed, looking at the ceiling. Okay, his mother coming once a week to bring him food and whatever have you. And eventually he willed it within himself to start moving. He kind of like almost rehabilitated himself. And he grew up with a slight limp. Okay, because eventually they put braces on him and whatever have you. But he rehabilitated himself probably to like 95%.
You're absolutely correct, Adel. I remember a classic case that I was associated with, where a child with mongolism was rehabilitated to the extent that this child learned the Torah in the shul, in our shul, and turned out to be a semi-productive human being that could hold down a job. The great problem in the olden days, well, in my olden days as a pediatrician, was that a lot of these people were put into institutions. They were cast aside. Today, the attitude has changed completely. You know, places like the Hope Home and Forest Town, they still function, and they function very well. But not everybody gets placed into there. The policy now is to allow some of these terrible disorders, preferably be treated at home. There's no better place than a home for the mother and father to take up to the interests of the child. And you find that the prognosis is much better.
Mm.
Again, it comes back to the old story. Diagnose the condition early. Start with supportive treatment early. Don't wait and wait and wait until it's too late.
Can I go back to the floppy syndrome and ask you, are there different levels of floppy syndrome? Like, when my daughter was born, she had very low muscle tone. She bum shuffled and couldn't stand up properly. There was actually a very big concern when she was born that she did have the floppy syndrome, but it was just wasn't to such a degree.
Well, it can be of different levels, yes, depending how you visualize it. But it's usually a very classic condition where it's called the ragdoll. We twist the baby around and pull the baby around, and it's just floppy. Mm-hmm. Everything flops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's purely muscular. There are no other physical signs. And there the prognosis is always good. You can always reassure the parent and say, get to 2, 2.5 years of age, your baby will crawl, your baby will stand, your baby will walk. Mm. The physical signs will be delayed, but the baby will be normal. And another important point to remember is that you can often get the severe cerebral palsy sometimes with muscle cerebral palsy who remain perfectly normal mentally. They remain not only normal mentally, but very, very bright.
Mm.
So again, never prognosticate. Don't say your child is hopeless. It'll never be anything. Never do that.
Very important. Very important. Okay.
The muscular dystrophies. Unfortunately, this is a very tragic condition in pediatrics. It's genetic, but it is usually much later in onset. It usually begins at 2 to 5 years of age, unlike the first two that I've mentioned. And it's characterized by progressive muscle weakness and loss of muscle tissue over time. It's genetic destruction of the muscle tissue. If diagnosed early, some of the more serious sequelae may be delayed. The most important in this group is known as Duchenne muscular dystrophy. How do you diagnose it? The mother and father usually give you the diagnosis. They say to you, doctor, my child's 2 years of age now, and all of a sudden, I put the child down to lie down, he can't get up. She can't get up. Sit her in a chair, she can't get out of the chair. You do the thing yourself, and you find that it's indeed true. Here you've got a 2.5 or a 3-year-old that just can't get raise themselves into a sitting position. Remember, that is always a red flag and needs early recognition. Unfortunately, in this condition, the lifespan is shortened, because the condition may spread upwards. It usually starts in the lower limbs and the pelvic girdle, and then moves up into the respiratory areas. And tragically, these people end up in wheelchairs. They eventually end up with respiratory problems, and that terminates their lives. And if you look around yourself, even in the areas where we are, you will see tragic cases of this. Secondly, we come to the bone disorders. Another classic example of the importance of early diagnosis, and the one that stands out most vividly in my mind, is rickets. Rickets usually appears in the first 2 years of life, even though it's often there insidiously from the age of 3 months. It's due to a deficiency of vitamin D and calcium. It starts off because motor development is slow. There is delayed crawling and walking with the occurrence of bow legs. But the condition can be suspected a lot earlier, because where the bones in the chest meet the cartilaginous junctions, especially in the rib cage of the chest, the junctions become swollen. And as you feel the baby's chest, you feel these knobs all the way down. This is called the rickety rosary, and it's a red flag. Always be careful.
Is this genetic also?
No, rickets is not genetic.
So
it's not genetic. It's due to the failure to absorb vitamin D or utilize vitamin D and calcium properly. Okay. It may have a genetic basis.
No, I'm saying, so it's metabolic. The child just can't use...
It can't use these things properly. And also, it depends on prematurity. And of course, the people who care for children at this age have always taken the precaution of giving vitamins and iron. And that's the correct approach to follow. You will do that with a premature baby in every single one. But you have to also remember that even in a breastfed baby, a normally breastfed baby, from the age of 3 to 4 months, it may run out of essential vitamins and iron, and you should always give them vitamins and iron. And in this way, the occurrence of rickets has been largely limited. The early symptoms of rickets, often not recognized, are recurrent chest problems in a baby. Due to weakness of the chest and the rickety rosary, the chest doesn't expand and contract properly. And they start presenting with bronchitis and pneumonias, and you just don't know the cause. They suspect immune deficiency. It's not immune deficiency. It's rickets. And be very, very careful.
So is it something that you see in undeveloped countries, or you can get it?
You can get it here. It's often missed, very, very missed, especially in children that present with recurrent chest infection. Now, the earliest bone to look for rickets is the wrist, funnily enough. And a simple x-ray of the chest and the wrist will give you the diagnosis.
Because what? You'll see knobs on?
You'll see flaring at the end of the wrist. I don't want to go into the x-ray findings. But you will see that the bones become soft. They become decalcified. And you get the classic x-ray findings of rickets.
Right.
Early to diagnose. Then there is Blount's disease. Another peculiar name, but a very common problem that occurs in the rooms. This is a growth disorder of the tibia, causing the legs to angle inwards and resemble bow legs. It typically presents in the first 5 years of life, and it is more common in the overweight child. It can sometimes present with a limp or difficulty in walking, but is generally asymptomatic. It will inevitably improve with age, and there's no need to put them in casts or strap up the legs or anything like that. You can reassure the parents, and eventually everything will go straight.
My sister had bow legs. She had to be put into casts.
No.
I don't think they did in those days.
Yeah.
I also cost one or two of my kids. That I think was a standard.
It was a standard practice, but
in the old days, as we say,
yeah. 50 years ago.
Yeah, right. My son is in 50. But yeah, 30 years ago, that's what happened.
Yeah. Now the fourth condition involving bones is a very, very important one because it also carries over into adulthood. The classic pediatric condition associated with this is fractures. Important condition of osteogenesis imperfecta. In simple words, it means fragile bones. The condition is genetic, and it may be of three types. The malignant type is where the bones start fracturing in utero. They fracture even more during the delivery, and the baby just ends up a complete mess at birth. It may survive the neonatal period, but usually dies by a year or 2 years of age with multiple fractures. As you touch the baby, it's like an eggshell. Hmm. You break the bone.
Oh, wow.
That's osteogenesis imperfecta type 1. Type 2 is the intermediate type, which you either may or may not spot. And type 3 is the type that is very slow in onset, which you may only spot when they become adults, adolescents, or even later on. We had a houseman when I was registrar who we diagnosed with osteogenesis imperfecta. He didn't have a clue that he had osteogenesis imperfecta, despite the fact that he'd had 3 or 4 fractures. Now, what is the clue that tells you about this? What is the pathology of osteogenesis imperfecta? These conditions, all of them, are due to a gene mutation which leads to insufficient or defective collagen and thereby weakened bone structure. Now, the first place where you pick up weakened collagen, remember collagen is the gel that keeps the whole skeleton together. Defective collagen in the bones will lead to repeated fractures. The classic early sign of depleted collagen in the body is blue sclery. When you look at a person's eyes and the whites of the eyes are blue, you know you've made the diagnosis. Why? Because this occurs when the 3 collagen layers in the eye, which are above the retina, become defective or absent altogether, and the blueness of the retina shows through.
If you have children that are always fracturing their elbows, their knees, their who knows what,
look
their legs.
The eyes.
But I mean, is this something that they should be looking into? Yeah. You always say, "Oh my children, I'm at the emergency room again."
Of course, we remember it's the early diagnosis. Don't bumble along and put them into plasters and start treating them.
Well, just go check it up, I guess. And then if they go and say, sorry, just your kids have all the higher, you know.
Yeah, but you do have families, though, that their children are always fracturing something and they're always in a cast for some a reason that other children would not be.
Yeah.
And then in that case, do you just give them collagen? Wow.
So that's what I was going to ask. So a collagen supplement will stop it, and then you can just have like a normal life. Obviously, I'm sure you have to take like very large quantity of collagen every
year. Yes, well, you have to supplant their collagen so they have enough collagen.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of collagen, do you suggest literally just like a good bone broth?
Bone broth,
collagen supplement.
All the other collagen supplements, omega. The important thing is to diagnose it. Look at the eyes, the sclery, and you'll be surprised you've diagnosed.
I just want to mention one thing about collagen. We had this discussion offline. There's quite a few collagens that are not kosher because, as doctor said, they're made of bone broth and they will have derivatives of non-kosher animals. So there is collagens available that are kosher, that are made from fish. And they do have the Beth-Din stamp on it. So just be careful when you are taking a collagen supplement. And truthfully, everybody should be, and as we age, we should be taking that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely take collagen every single day. So if you want to know which collagen is kosher in South Africa, you can just send an email to info@chaifm.com and I will give you the name where you can, you know, the name of the product and who you can get it. I'm not saying that there aren't other collagen products that may be kosher. I'm not aware of them, but I am aware of one that does carry a Beth Din stamp and one should be careful in that regard.
Definitely. And also remember in osteogenesis imperfecta, the classic x-ray findings in the skull. You see it in the bones of the skull before you see it anywhere else. And a good doctor, a good radiologist will pick it up immediately. Lastly, in the bone disorders, we come to the most tragic one of all, the periosteal reaction. Now, the periosteum is the covering of the bone. You get the bone marrow, you get the bone, and then you get the covering of the bone, which is the periosteum. It is the outer layer of the bone, and it responds by swelling. This is often interpreted as being due to inflammation or infection of the underlying bone. In other words, osteomyelitis. But in a small percentage of cases, and never forget this, the outer layer of the bone may become swollen due to the infiltration of tumor leukemic cells in a child.
Oh, wow.
They infiltrate the bone and bone swelling and pain occurs. And I remember the all too tragic incidents of where we were called up to the orthopedic ward to see these poor children lying in traction to treat their osteomyelitis, because the leukemia hadn't presented in the blood yet. It was still in the bones. They were swollen. And the diagnosis was being missed all the time.
We're talking to Dr. Cussell, and we're talking about the pediatric scaffolding. I'm waiting until we get to the old scaffolding, Doctor. If you have any questions, 34519 is our SMS line, 061-895-1019 is our WhatsApp number. This is the Healthy You Wealthy You Show.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You Show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
You're listening to us, myself and Faggy, together with Dr. Jack Cussell, and we are speaking about scaffolding problems. Problems with your bones, your collagen, your muscles, your fibers.
And joints.
And joints. I keep on forgetting the joints. Right. We were talking about the periosteal reaction.
Yeah. And that is what a tragic condition that should always be borne in mind when the diagnosis is osteomyelitis and the swelling doesn't go down with antibiotics. Be very careful to go to the doctor immediately, and the doctor should be alerted to do a bone marrow, because that's where you'll find it. Now, there are also conditions of metabolic or endocrine disorders in children which may lead to frequent fracturing of the bones. But I won't deal with them here because we're running out of time. They are much more frequent in adults. The one condition that must almost be borne in mind, particularly in adults, is the benign adenoma of the parathyroid gland. In an adult, it's congenital, it's transmitted. You get adenomatous areas arising in the parathyroid gland, which pour out parathyroid hormone. And this parathyroid hormone, in simple language, removes the calcium from the bones, and the adult starts fracturing easily. Unfortunately, I had this very condition in my own family, and the individual concerned had to have a parathyroid operation to remove these at the moment.
My mother also had a parathyroid removed.
Wow.
Often missed in adults. Be careful of the adult that keeps on fracturing.
It's also very different to the thyroid. It's a parathyroid.
Yes, it's completely different. And just to mention briefly in passing, there's Cushing's syndrome, which is due to an excessive cortisone we'll discuss in adults. It may also remove calcium from the bones, leading to fractures and cause muscle weakness and chronic kidney disease, where calcium may also disappear from the bones. The third group is joint pathology, and the most important condition over here is transient synovitis, the so-called tonsillar hip. this is the most, probably the most common joint condition that one deals with in private practice. It is due to a temporary inflammation of the hip joint with a connection of synovial fluid in the hip joint, which follows a throat infection. And what does it all come down to? You get a throat infection, you produce antibodies, those naughty antibodies go up and attack your joint.
I diagnosed that in my grandson about 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
My daughter said he's limping. Yeah. I said he's got water on the hip. I didn't call it the fancy name.
I mean, I have the same thing. A friend of mine, every single time her children get sick, they cannot walk on their legs.
Yes.
They're hopping, they're limping, and it happens every single time.
It's called the tonsillar hip. It's common in the 3 to 10 year age group. Yeah. It's more common in female. It presents with a limp and a low grade fever and is usually viral in etiology. Due to an antibody reaction, it lasts for 10 to 40 days and disappears, and antibiotics and the like don't have any effect on this, even though they're always given, but they're useless. They shouldn't be given. Just let it get better on its own. Then we come to Perthes disease. This is a much more serious condition of the hip. It is typically in the older child than the tonsillar hip and presents with pain, limp, and decreased motion of the hip joint. In contrast to the tonsillar hip, the symptoms go on. The child may limp for months or even years. In this condition, the blood supply to the femoral head leads to bone death. In the olden days, we used to believe that this was due to tuberculosis of the hip, but it is probably not so. We don't know why it occurred.
Is it also viral like the tonsillar hip?
No.
Aren't the symptoms very similar?
They're very similar, except that the limp is more prolonged. It goes on and it can go on for weeks.
And what do you do about it?
What you do about it is you, first of all, try to immobilize the hip joint so that it has a chance to heal.
Mm.
You don't let the child walk on that because it wears the bone down more and more and more. Eventually, you may have to do replacements.
Wow.
A terrible condition. Then there's juvenile idiopathic arthritis. This is the most common arthritis in children. The prodromal symptoms usually occur sometimes before the actual arthritis. These early symptoms of juvenile arthritis may be prolonged unexplained fevers in a child, rashes that have no explanation, fatigue, and above all, swollen lymph glands. This then gets followed by joint pain, swelling, and severe stiffness of the joints, which is ongoing all the time. That's juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And the last joint condition is growing pain.
Yes, because everything we blamed our kids when they could, thing is that you've got growing pains. Is it something real?
My son came to me just this morning with his foot is so sore, he doesn't know what to do with it. I said, your feet are growing.
I know it's not strictly speaking a Yiddish program, but it's what's known as Boba Mice. Yeah, but it's a convenient explanation for everything. And usually the grandmother will come up with it. Yeah.
In this case, it was Faggy. She was the mother, not
no,
the
he was so excited. He just feels like he's a growing boy.
Well, it's a benign condition presenting with muscle pain in the legs, usually during the growth spurts, usually at night, but with no joint pain, swelling, or stiffness.
You don't think it's maybe just a magnesium deficiency or something like today?
That's exactly what I did. I put him in the bath today and I threw salt in the bath.
Yeah.
And I made him even massage it into his foot. He felt better.
Very good.
And lastly, we come to collagen pathology. This has been the most neglected of all four points of the scaffold. Collagen is the protein glue that interacts and keeps all the tissues, the skeletal tissues, intact. These include the bones, the muscles, the joints, the skin, and the cartilage. I've already mentioned these conditions in the talk, including but they also include hypermobile joints, brittle bones with frequent fractures. In addition, this jelly-like substance, collagen, also supports and glues together other tissues in the body. And this is particularly for our, how can I put it, middle-aged to early middle-aged.
Those that are wanting to age gracefully.
Jewish women who want to age gracefully.
There you go.
Collagen is the substance that keeps the firmness and the elasticity of the skin, where deficiency presents as sagging, wrinkles in the face, and
I think someone has to come up with collagen injections instead of Botox.
No, yes, of course, don't go to Botox, go to collagen. Collagen is promoted by bone broth and egg white, which contains proline, the essential amino acid for collagen production.
How about white egg white injections?
Just how much is going to get yourself a kosher collagen, Fady? Just take it every single day. Something so.
I was discussing it with a cousin just before the show. How about putting egg whites on your skin?
But probably you could land up doing
you'd
that.
You'd be surprised when we come to the adult program. You'd be surprised at the role of eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs in keeping this whole structure together. The egg is the powerhouse of metabolism in your body. It keeps your bones intact, your joints intact, your skin intact, your collagen intact.
And your cholesterol intact, which is okay. And we're going to go for a little bit of a break. This is the Healthy You Wealthy Show, 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You Wealthy You Show with Adel Kosilski and Fagie Stern.
Okay, now that we've sorted out our wrinkles and our sagging skin and eating eggs.
Our joints, don't forget the joints.
And the joints, what is the conclusion, good doctor?
The conclusion is, what I'm saying here today, as far as pediatrics is concerned, is a lot easier than dealing with adults. You know, they often say to you, why did you become a pediatrician? Well, there's several reasons why. My experience is that a child tells it like it really is.
Mm.
A child doesn't deceive you. A child presents with the symptoms. An adult, sometimes not so. You've got to sift your way through everything. And therefore, if you're a good observer and take notice of symptoms and signs, particularly in these conditions, you will save the child a lot of trouble. Always listen to the mom and dad and the caregivers. They are the ones that give you the ultimate diagnosis.
Well, there you have it. And thank you again, Dr. Kassel, for all your wisdom and the depth of knowledge that you share with us. I think by the time we finish, are you going to be able to give Fagie and I maybe a certification of amateur pediatrician? No. I don't want to hear the doctor shouting at us.
Actually, there's one person that's ahead of it. It's my wife.
Okay. We'll have to speak to your wife. So that wraps up the Healthy You, Wealthy You show for this year. Fagie and I wish all our listeners and you too, Dr. Kassel, a happy Hanukkah, a well-deserved rest. Remember, when you go on holiday, it does not give you the time or the space to actually binge and eat badly and do things in a wrong way. In fact, it's a time where you can choose relaxation, some meditation, some calmness, and actually eating quite healthy. So we're wishing everybody a healthy, wealthy you break. Fagie, enjoy your
time. Definitely looking forward. Thank you so much.
And to everybody else, and please God, we will be back on the radio early in January. This is 101.9 High FM.